Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 5th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Boy, we got a lot of news this week.
Yeah, it's like I've been flowing out of Las Vegas in the World Series, right?
Yeah.
Lots 1 week and then nothing the next week and then lots the next week. So this is a lot week. Just jump right in. We're more than halfway through the World Series of Poker. Here are this week's updates. Gershon Distenfeld, my new favorite name, by the way.
Yeah, that's a cool name.
Won event 48, the $1,500 shootout, and pledged to donate his $204,063 in winnings to various charities, just as he did with his winnings in the last main event. Farzad Banyani won event 49, the 10K No Limit Deuce to 7 Lowball Draw Championship for his fourth bracelet. The event was the first of the series to draw more players than last year's event. Brian Rast won event 51, the 3K six-handed for his fifth bracelet. Robert McMillian won event 52, the 1K Seniors Championship. It was the fourth time he cashed in that event. Sean Deeb, your buddy.
Yeah.
Won event 53, the 25K PLO championship for his fifth bracelet and his second in the event, and still has not paid Chris. Ben Yu won event 56, the 10K six-handed championship for his fourth bracelet. Sensing a trend here, folks.
Yeah, geez.
Brian Yoon won event 57, the 10K Deuces 7 triple draw championship for his fourth bracelet and his first in a non-Hold'em event. Doyle Brunson made his first appearance this year, Chris, in event 58, the 1K Super Seniors.
Wow.
Michael Graydon, who was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer 7 months ago, tweeted for help in raising money to buy into this year's main event and quickly raised enough to cover his entire buy-in. And our good friend Phil Hellmuth unleashed his second major rant of the series, this time on Twitter. Somebody at Poker News won that contest. Criticizing the WSOP Player of the Year scoring that he says gives too much credence to cashing in events instead of making final tables, as he does.
Of course. The only reason why he'd argue for it is because it only helps him. What I like most about what you just read is that I go through and edit it for you, and yet you still put in all the words that don't need to be there. That's my favorite thing. It's like he's putting in words that aren't even there because I took them out, but he just memorizes how he writes these things. One thing I want to say is I found this interesting. Last week on the show, we were talking about if anyone would catch Phil Hellmuth, you know, and all that. And when Sean Deeb won, I don't even think he was asked this question, but he might have been. But the quote that was with the release was totally, I'm going to catch him. I'm going to catch him easily. Do you see how many times I'm winning and all these things? You know, it was paraphrasing, but I mean, he basically was saying that he's going to be the one that catches Phil Hellmuth, even though, you know, right? It's like right on cue. When we asked that question last week, here he is answering it for us.
Well, maybe he still listens to the show just to keep tabs on his running tab.
Yeah. If I had the VIG running, he'd owe me like $8,000 right now. I mean, serious.
But, you know, yeah, so to his point, though, I mean, he's young enough and he's playing at such a high caliber right now. I mean, it's possible. You know, that's why we had a discussion last week, right?
Yeah. So
just depends on how crazy Phil goes, you know, in these last 20, 30 years he has. But, yeah, I mean, it's possible.
Yeah. A lot of big names again this week. You know, and it's funny that they all won, a lot of them won their fourth bracelet. But Brian Rast, that's somebody I thought could catch him, too. He's young enough, I think. He plays all the games. He's obviously a great pro, great player. He's got 5-2. He's somebody that could catch him. But a lot of big names and a lot of multiple bracelet winners this week. It's crazy.
Yeah, what was that? Three or four bracelet winners and 2-5 bracelet winners.
Yeah.
This past week. That's crazy, right? Yep.
If they added, even if they just averaged one a year or one every other year, and they're only 11 or 12 away, I mean, in 20 years they could have them, you know?
Absolutely.
It's possible. Very possible.
So we've had one event now that's outdrawn what it was the last series. And that was that Deuce to 7-1 I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And that only had 120 entrants, by the way. It had 93 the last time. So that's probably a statistic anomaly, right?
Yeah, that's not shocking that all the other ones are still lagging. I mean, there's still a lot of people who didn't come here or can't come here or whatever. So it's not surprising.
Yeah, we knew it was going to be down. It looks like the article I read is it's down 30% from the last full event. So. Which, you know, I think is probably kind of in line with what we probably thought, both in terms of the travel bans, for foreigners and then the vax status for those. So, and I can't remember the math now, but I'm like, if we do 30%, we're probably going to overshoot on our event predictions, aren't we? Cause I'm pretty sure mine was factored in 5%. So.
Yeah, although they did add two more shifts or whatever, right? Two more flights.
And the travel bans are lifted before then, so we might have an outside chance of hitting that mark. So.
See, this is why gambling is so fun.
So, and then obviously a feel-good story with this Michael Graydon getting a chance to play in the main event. It's terminal concern. And literally, I could have listed, there were like four of these articles this week of people buying in. Either buying in people or fundraising for folks that either had a loss this year or have a health concern or something like that. So, once again, poker community can be extremely dangerous.
That's nice. Yeah, finally a good story, not more crap, you know.
And I'm not going to defend Mr. Hellmuth here, but aren't all Player of the Year scorings open to criticism, no matter what they are?
Sure.
Even like, you know, I was talking to a friend this week, high school football, both here in Florida and also in Ohio where I grew up, are based on ratings now, not records, you know, so there are 2-7 teams playing in the Ohio high school football playoffs right now because they just made a really difficult schedule. Right. And then of course now we have the college championship, with Cincinnati getting screwed right now and all that too. Right. So, all these things are ripe for criticism because there's just not a perfect system. So I guess, you know, obviously his argument is that making a final table is better than cashing, which I think we would all agree. But, you know, I think of Tony Cousineau, we keep talking about, right? He had a strategy of cashing. That's what he did. He cashed more than anybody. Didn't win anything ever, but he cashed in so many events. So it is a strategy on what you want. And, so I don't know. I mean, he might have a beef there.
Hey, he was our player of the year.
That's right. He was.
Right. Because he cashed so many times and he was from Florida and we put him on the cover.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right. Everything is, there was a saying, or I don't know if it was a saying or somebody, it might've been somebody on television, but they were talking about, no matter what you do. Oh, I know what it was. It was the, you know what I was finally watching? Sorry, my mind is going all this place, but.
See the spoons?
I finally got around to watching Making a Murderer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
because it was 2018 and I was into Game of Thrones then and I had other stuff going on and I never got around to it and I forgot about it. Well, now I'm experiencing all the, just emotions of it and being pissed off and. But they interviewed a lawyer on there, and he was like, no matter what you do, you're going to be criticized, so you might as well do it right. It was basically the quote. And so that's the same thing, is you try to do whatever you think is right with these scoring things, and then you're going to get criticized no matter what you do anyway. And I don't know, what is more impressive, making 3 final tables or cashing 10 times? I think cashing is harder than making a final table overall. If you make 1 final table in 20 tournaments, or you cash way better than the expected 10% and cash 10 times instead of 2 times, that seems to me more impressive, especially if you get a final table in there or something. It's hard to really weigh it. It's hard to be objective about it.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting, and this is kind of skewed because pros are well, I mean, name pros are well, obviously there's a reason they call them name pros rather than pros, right?
Yeah.
But it'd be interesting at the end of the series just to do a random Jay Leno streetwalking.
And
ask, hey, who do you think was the player of the year at the World Series this year? And that would give you a better sense, right, of just who's been reading the headlines and what they think. And that is going to be obviously people that have won Because that's who you talk about. You don't talk about, hey, you see Chris Cosenza cashed 128th in that World Series
tournament. Yeah, right.
You know, you just don't see that, right? So, but that doesn't mean it's not impressive that there are some people out there doing it. And yeah, his criticism included people. I mean, no one's going to win the Player of the Year by not making final tables. I mean, it's impossible. I mean, you can cash every event and not get enough points. So his point is a little bit skewed as well, too. So, I mean, the people he's complaining about have made final tables. They just haven't made as many as he has and don't have a bracelet like he does this year. But they're just cashing in more. So, I don't know. It just seems like he wakes up every morning looking for something to complain about. So.
Yeah. Or at least something if it doesn't help him to complain about. Yes, you know, exactly. If they said, oh, we're going to change the system and whatever you do makes you Player of the Year, he'll be happy. He won't say a word.
We should give him credit, though, for not burning down the Rio, though. So
That's true.
He's probably only doing that because he wants to win the Player of the Series, and you know, if they end it now, he's not going to be at the top. So,
and I'm starting to think too, that's the only way they'll ever move the World Series out of the Rio, because every year it's like, oh, they're selling the Rio and it's going to Caesars, or you know, and every year it's at the Rio.
Yep.
So burn it down, and then we'll see what happens.
All right, Phil Ivey launched his new NFT items, which included a custom shoe from Dominic the Shoe Surgeon Chambrone. Chambrone previously created a gold-studded $100,000 shoe for LeBron James. Bidders can also own, in quotes, a hand played between Ivy and Tom Dwan and a chance to fly to Vegas to play in a high-stakes game. Ivy was non-committal on whether he will play a World Series event this year. As of that point, he had not yet.
And as of this morning, I saw an article that was like, NFTs are disappearing and we don't know why. Gee, I'm shocked. You mean you can't protect it?
Something for their money.
It's not in your electronic wallet or whatever the hell they call these things. And maybe you misplaced your electronic wallet. I don't know. But, I mean, it's serious. These NFTs. I had this huge discussion at the national show for the Bonsai convention that I went to in September in New York with this kid who is starting these NFTs for bonsai trees. And so, like, you know, you take a picture of the tree and then that digital image is now preserving the tree in time and there's only one shot of that tree at that precise moment in time, and
that's interesting.
And I'm like, who cares? If you don't own the actual tree, why is the image of the tree more valuable than the actual tree? And so we had this huge conversation, and he's building his whole business on this. Like it was his whole entire business, and I was just like, you know, I don't mean to, you know, ruin your entire business or whatever, but you know, this is pretty ridiculous. And everybody at the table was kind of like. Like everyone else, there's deer in headlights at this time right now when they're still trying to understand NFTs and everything. But again, like this shoe one. How do you create a shoe that's an NFT?
Well, yeah, I think you actually get the shoe if you're the high bidder for the NFT. Which, again, going back, this is what I – at the beginning when we start talking about this, because there are other things where you can go out and you get an experience in addition to it. That makes sense to me because now at home, if I'm interested in that experience or that physical item, I'll be happy to bid on that all day long. But I'm not going to bid on this stupid photo.
Right.
Tweet. So it's really only working as far as I can tell, and I could be wrong. It seems to be only working when you attach something physical to it. And at that point, let's just sell the physical
one. Exactly. I just don't get it. Here.
Let's call it an NFT. Here. Call it a shoe. Let's call it a high stakes game invitation. Let's do that.
So, Scott's like walked his morning walk and he's gone 20 miles and he's dying of thirst. And I walk up to him and I have an ice cold can of Pabst Blue Ribbon, or I have a picture of an ice cold can of Pabst Blue Ribbon. Which one is Scott going to give me $10 for? Let me see. Which one's more valuable, the actual can that he can drink from or the picture of the can, you know? And I know we sound ignorant by saying it this way. And it's not that I don't get it. I do get it. It's just silly to me.
It just is. Yeah. So the other interesting thing about this article was that when it first was Poker News first posted it, it was David Copperfield's mansion. And how excited they were and how there was no NDA signed and blah, blah, blah. And then now that's scrubbed everywhere.
That's hilarious.
So I don't know what's going on there. I'm not making any assumptions. I think it was because I was amazed when I saw David Copperfield's mansion. But then that doesn't exist. So I don't know whether it was never David Copperfield's mansion or whether David Copperfield literally made that disappear. He did make the Statue of Liberty disappear once, so.
Yep.
The dude's got powers, so.
I could tell you an interesting story about that someday if you want. Not on the show, because it's just not worth it. But my father-in-law, before he died, was a world, maybe a world-famous magician. Yep. He was in all the major magical groups and stuff, the IBM, the Circle of Magic, all those things. But I'll tell you a story about that off-air someday. Pretty good. But what I want to talk about now is, if you were Phil Ivey, would you ever play in a tournament in this country again? Like, you know, if you owe all that money, why would you just playing for them then? Why would you even play?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I mean, it's very clear that he is focused on other ways of making money now off his fame. And, you know, credit to him. That's fantastic. That's what you get to do. So, yeah, you know.
Well, the other thing is you'd really truly test the pro theory of, oh, I don't play for the money. I play for the rings, or I play for the bracelets. Okay, well, go ahead. You're not going to get any money, so go play for free and win those bracelets.
And yeah. Really, what does he have to play for? He's already in the Hall of Fame, right? So, I mean, sure, yeah, I guess he could. I forget how many bracelets he has.
I think it's 10 or 11, yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, he could threaten Helmuth if he wanted to. But, I mean, honestly, look at Helmuth's life now. This guy is just so fixated on these bracelets that he is driving himself crazy, right?
Yeah.
His rants are ridiculous, and you know, I think it's just because he's under the stress that he's putting under himself. There's no one out there, you know, putting him under stress to win his 16th bracelet or 17th bracelet or 18th bracelet, right? It's all him. Yeah. So it's interesting when you can pull yourself out of that world and some people don't need it anymore. So
And
I don't know whether that's what's going on with Phil, if it's really just that he's frustrated that he can't play because, you know, he would have to pay the money back, or if he just says, hey, I don't need it anymore. My life is out, right?
Right.
Doing a Vanessa Selps, just walking away and, you know, doing something else. So, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, here's this week's update on Poker Room reopenings in Kansas. Hollywood Kansas Speedway will reopen as December 9th. And in West Virginia, Wheeling Island Hotel Casino Racetrack this poker room. That gets us to 284 reopened poker rooms in the United States. And remember to go to antiupmagazine.com/reopen to get all those details, and email us at editor@antiupmagazine.com if you have updates. And that's where we get most of these updates, so I appreciate it. That's where the Hollywood Kansas Speedway came this week. So
yep, absolutely.
Thank you.
Any updates? Papes, the Antiup Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money sites, available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Antiup Fans group on Facebook and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call to four questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup PokerCast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup Fans group on Facebook. We get to complete O'Malley's move today, which is so exciting, so we're going to play part one for it to refresh our memories, and we'll see you on the other side. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing in a $1, $2 deep stack no limit hold'em home game. The min buy-in is $200, max is $500, but most players buy in for the max. It plays more like a 2-5 game. We are six-handed. The blinds post, and we are under the gun with $700, up $200, and the 7 of diamonds, 6 of diamonds. We limp. The MP folds, but everybody else calls. There's $10 in the pot, and the flop is the 9 of hearts, 8 of hearts, 5 of spades. The small blind and big blind both check, and it's up to us. We've just flopped the nuts, but there is a flush draw, higher straight draws, and potential sets that could fill up. No matter what, I never slow play a flop straight. We overbet the pot and make it $15 to go. The cutoff calls, but everybody else folds. The cutoff is a pretty decent player, but he can get tricky. He bought in for $500 and sits with around a starting stack. There's now $40 in the pot, and the turn is the deuce of spades. The backdoor spades are coming in, but we still have the nuts. We make a $30 bet, and our opponent quickly calls. There's now $100 in the pot, and the river is the queen of diamonds. Let's go for some value here. We make another $30 bet. This time, our opponent counts out $100 and slides it into the pot. So, did he catch us? What's the move?
Damn, this really feels like Jack 10 got there. However, our straight should be well-disguised here, so a fair chance we are still good here. And definitely not confident enough to raise, but I will call.
Yeah, you know, all your points are valid. That's
I'm sorry, I didn't cut out.
I know, I'm sorry. That was perfect. I think that's exactly what I would say, so I guess I'll call too. Here comes part two.
Hello again. Did Jack 10 run us down here? That's literally the only hand we're losing to. He was calling quickly. Could he have missed a flush draw? I think we're ahead here, but I can't get Jack 10 out of my mind. We call. Our opponent tables the five of hearts, five of clubs for a flopped set. We show our straight and rake in the pot. This led to some discussion about my call on the end being bad and I left value on the table. What do you think? Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying I never slow play flop straights. You just never know what could end up happening. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, with the benefit of all the knowledge we have now, yes, we left value on the table by not raising. Our straight was well disguised, as we thought. But that Jack 10 is such a real possibility that the call was the most prudent decision, I think.
Yeah, you know, I don't think if you make the raise that you'd want to make on based on that bet, if you really were going to raise, it'd probably be like $300. And I don't think a set's going to call there. I think they're going to realize they were beat, especially if they replay the hand in their heads. So I think it's a good call. I mean, the only way you make a raise there and you know, is to know they have something that might be able to call, and you can't be confident enough they don't have Jack 10. So I like it. I like the call, and I think that's what was the right thing to do.
Yeah, that's a spot where that river really cost us, because if that river wasn't that queen.
Right.
Because it just made it seem like that Jack 10 was possible.
Yeah.
Story. So, yeah. I mean, you got to consider the stuff that's probable, and Jack 10 was super probable there, even though that wasn't the actual holding. So
yeah, absolutely.
All right, it's time for the AdvancedPokerTrading.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If you haven't wanted something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. And our good friend John Urban, he's provided us two quality hands already. He's got two more, so we'll see whether he keep running the table here. And remember, all these hands are from a 1-3 no-limit game at a Maryland casino. All right, this is the very next hand after last week's hand.
Oh.
And he starts with 780 Skittles. The under the gun, who he describes as a loose, passive player who seems to lack experience, raises to 11. Under the gun plus one calls, and we are in the under the gun plus two with the ace of clubs, tray of clubs.
Well, these are the hands that you wouldn't mind just taking a flyer on. We obviously have a decent amount of money in front of us now, and I don't mind limping. I don't know. There is a case to be made for raising and representing and whatever, but the guy is loose, and maybe he's inexperienced, so he might not understand what you're doing or might understand what the implications are of somebody raising a few spots behind him. So these are the types of hands where I just call, and then if somebody goes crazy, I'm like, it cost me $11 or whatever, but I took a chance to try to flop the nut flush or flush draw or two pair or a wheel. And I don't dislike this hand, but I don't, with people behind me that are in position still available, if I raise and then they call, now they're in position on me. If they re-raise, I've wasted $30. So, you know, I feel like if I knew the people behind me were kind of passive, I would probably just limp and hope for a nice flop.
Yeah, this is definitely a hand that you could easily fold if you want to, easily call with if you want to. The raise, I think, is a little, it's probably the worst of the three options, I think. But it's a hand that has a lot of flop potential, as you mentioned. You flop both a straight and a flush with it, or even a straight flush, right?
Right.
Your kicker sucks, of course. It seems like this game, there raises every hand, so you can't play too tight. You're going to have to, you know, get in there and play with some cards that aren't perfect. So if I feel fairly confident that it's not going to be raised behind me, then I'm definitely calling here. If I feel that there's a good chance of a raise behind me, I don't think I want to pay more than $11 to see this flop. In that case, I'd fold. But I don't like the raise here. So,
right, you said pretty much exactly what I just said.
Yep. Yeah. Your points are all valid.
You could have done a Patrick Swayze and said ditto.
Ditto. Oh, man, I'm not like the wind, though.
Oh, man. Now, believe me, I've shared a hotel room with you. You are like the wind.
Oh, man. All right, so our hero says all three options are on the table here. Against more disciplined players, I see merit in raising, but there are still several players left to act, and I'm at a loose table facing an under-the-gun open. So a bluff raise doesn't seem too attractive. If this was a tighter table, I'd fold here since the ROI wouldn't be enough. But at this loose table, I call.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we're probably saying the same thing. The only reason I think he's putting three options on the table are because he's right. If the game was different, you would consider a raise here. And I would definitely consider a raise in a different game. But the way this game is described, I don't think a raise is really an option. So.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. The button and a big blind also call. So five of us go to the flop with a pot of $50 after the casino's cut. Flop is the king of spades, jack of spades, jack of clubs, and it checks to us.
Wow. Yeah, I can't bet. I got guys behind me calling in position, and we've missed this absolutely completely.
Almost completely, yep.
No matter what you do, you can't make the nuts, you know? Yep. And no matter what you do, you're probably splitting a pot or losing a pot to a kicker if somehow if you hit your card. I don't see it. You know, if you hit ace, you have aces and jacks with a king kicker, so you might chop, but then someone else might have, you know, ace king. You know, who knows? But there's not a lot of raising here, so this is just a horrible, horrible flop for us. I'm checking behind and folding to any bet. No, well, there's one club, so it has to go runner, runner clubs, and you still can't be confident because the board's paired. Yep. I mean, no thanks. I'm done with this hand.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm done with this hand, but I'm not voluntarily putting money in first here, so I'll like to see what happens here, but the easy check here for me.
Yeah.
All right, our hero agrees. He says, no sense betting into four players here. I have a backdoor flush draw, but it's too likely someone got a piece of this. I check. It checks around.
Jeez.
The turn is the eight of clubs, so the board now is king of spades, jack of clubs, eight of clubs, and the under the gun, who was the original raiser, bets 20. And the player in between us calls, and now it's on us.
I don't know. I realize that we've picked up a flush draw, but it's like not the nut flush draw, because straight flush is still possible, and it doesn't matter. Your flush could still be dead. You could be drawn dead to your flush. So, you know, I just don't know. I guess I'm going to call the 20, but I don't want to, and I'm not going to get really invested in this hand on the river, I'll tell you that. You know, even if a club comes, you know, somebody could just flop the boat on us, you know? I don't know. I guess I've made so much money right now that I'm up a bunch that another $20 really isn't that. And I shouldn't really think of it that way. I shouldn't really, you know, should still play optimally. But you got two callers, so there was 50 before, now there's 90 in the pot total. You know, 9-2, so 20, I don't know, 5-1, almost. So, I don't know. I guess I call, but it's a loose call with a lot of caution.
I'm not entirely sure that it's not optimal to call here. We can't play hands individually. I mean, I know that's how we do it on the show. We talk about one hand, right? But in a session, when you're having a very good session, and it sounds like John is having a great session here, you've got more bullets, right? You've got more money. So you're able to take a couple more chances than if you were sitting on $60 here, right? So, you know, in a vacuum, yes, it's probably not optimal to call here. Considering the entire environment of the day and the situation, it might be closer to optimal. But yeah, it is dangerous here because we still have to hit a card. We have nothing right now. And as we've said all hand, if even we hit the hand, we don't know that it's good. And we still have players behind us to act here. So, I mean, the check around on the flop means nothing, right? Because if you hit this hard, you're not betting. And if you missed it, you're not betting. So we don't know what it is. And then obviously the proper thing to do after a really scary flop like this is to be the first one to bet to represent that you had it and you didn't bet. Right. So we honestly don't know where we are in this hand. And the fact that under the gun was the original Razor, I know he's loose passive, he's described as, so maybe that's a warning sign for us. But, you know, a jack or a pair of kings in his hand are very likely, right? So
it's funny that they call the guy loose passive. First of all, loose passive is just another word for calling station.
Yeah.
And yet this person raised preflop and now is bet out. So he's pretty aggressive right now in the sense that, yeah, he's not overly aggressive, but he's made the two, you know, alpha male moves in this hand that no one else has made. So I really don't know what to think of that either. To me, I mean, if we had Brent on the show, our friend Brent Philman, you know, he knows everything about poker. He knows everything about math, you know, or Vic G even, you know. These guys, I think, could still – I don't think it needs to necessarily be a vacuum. I when I talk about I've won a bunch of money and I like to speculate – that's preflop stuff. Once I get into the hand, I still want to make sound mathematical money decisions.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
In this case, I guess it's okay, but that paired board makes me think, okay, I'm making what might be a loose call mathematically, but I'm going to be cautious about it. Even if I make the flush, I'm not going to lose my stack with the flush and a paired board. And with everyone checking around after the flop, it could very well be that someone has a boat and flopped a boat or had three of a kind and rivered a boat, you know. So I'm just going to be cautious, but I'm still going to be like a little loose with my call.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. The other thing, too, is we've invested $11 in this hand. You know, I've become a much more disciplined player over the years, and, you know, I'm still splashing around on the Poker Stars free every once in a while. I got to get back in papes. I really do. I promise I'm going to do that sometime, yeah. But splash around, but I've gotten better at folding these hands and then watching that river come and not be a club and go pat myself on the back, right?
So yeah.
Once in a while, that club's going to come, and then, you know, everybody's going to turn over the cards, and your flush was going to be good here, and you're going to go, oh my gosh, you guys are idiots. But more times than not, that card is not going to come in, or it comes in, and we're going to lose. So I really don't think that we need to chase here. So obviously it's hand of the week, so I'm going to guess we are going to chase. But, you know, got 11 bucks in. There's going to be another hand coming up. So, all right. Our hero says, well, it's not usually a great idea to chase flushes on paired boards. $20 into a pot of $90. $90 is a pretty good price, and I'd have position on these players I call. Now, he does have position on those players, but we've got
got people behind you, yeah.
So, all right. Well, the button does fold, so that works out. The big blind calls, and apparently, I guess everybody else did as well too.
We had a bet and a call, and then we called, and the other guys are called. So that's the four out of five.
Yeah, we called. Yeah, yeah. I was on this idea that we were raising for some reason, which would have been horrible. But all right. So yeah. So 170 in the pot, going in the river, which is the seven of clubs. Of course, it is. So our final board is king of spades, jack of clubs, eight of clubs, seven of clubs. We hit our running flush. The under the gun bets 30. The guy in the middle, in between us, raises to 150.
Ugh. See, that's the thing. Now, was he – because he – let's just – we always end up getting to the end of the hand and then going back. But let's go back for a second. This plus one guy or whatever he is, right? He calls a raise preflop, right? He checks the flop. He calls a bet on the turn, and then he makes a big bet here, a big raise here on the end. It doesn't feel like he has a flush because he knows he doesn't have the nuts and the board's paired. What could do that with multiple people in the hand and not be afraid? I mean, only a boat or an ignorant set, you know, or trips or whatever you want to call it. So, yep. I don't know. It's hard to fold this, but, you know, that's tough. This is tough.
Yeah, no, I think you made a good point that this guy, if he flopped the boat here, he played it exactly like you would flop a flop, right? You check that flop, and then when somebody bets, you know, you don't let the jig be up yet. You call, let him walk, give him some leash, and then knowing that he has to act before you on the next street, right? I mean, that's always the danger is if you're out of position, you check, this going to get checked around. No danger here because, you know, he's either going to bet or check, and then you're going to bet. So he went in to bet, and now he raises, you know, to get his value out of this hand. So the only thing that's weird about this is the size of the raise.
Yeah, what did the guy bet originally? I forgot.
That's 30, and he raises to 150. So if we're sitting on the nuts or the second nuts, which would be like, you know, King's Full here, that seems like way too big of a bet to expect value, even from four people in this hand. I think maybe a raise to 100 is probably what I would do there.
Yeah. So you think what do you think? If he's bluffing? So trying to bluff five people or four people?
That's what I'm wondering. I mean, it's not a great hand to be bluffing here, I don't think, because obviously this under the gun player, again, as you're right, we boil down the description of him and he's calling station. So, you know, it's going to be really hard to bluff him off. Now, maybe that's the reason that the bet's so big, is that's the only way you get a calling station not to call, is to make it too big for them to call. But then you got to factor in the value of getting other people involved in this hand still. So I don't know. It's a weird size bet for me. That doesn't mean that I'm more likely to call. I think I'm done here. I mean, I don't want to, again, we invested 11 on a bad hand out of position because of its potential. And now we're going to end up seeing, 200, almost 200.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I can do it. I mean, I'm going to kick myself if I fold and they turn over ace king or something here. but I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a good call here.
No, all the books, when you read the books, when you first learn to play poker, they always tell you, when they caution you, that it's easier to bluff one person than it is two. In this case, it's three other people. This guy would have to, he's bluffing three people with that bet. Yeah,
still have people left to act.
There's still people left to act. And if he's bluffing, he doesn't know that we didn't slow play our kings full or our jacks full of kings or quad jacks or whatever the hell it is that we have. So for him to make that bet with two people left to act behind him is not an easy, or one person, I guess, because we're the third. So one person left, two, right? Us and then
the big blind's still in. The big blind checked. So the big blind still has to act after this.
Okay, so I think that's the key, is that there's multiple people behind him still yet to act. I don't think he thinks he can bluff three people. So in my mind, he's got it, and he's, like you said, playing on the calling station of the original raiser, that he might call this bet with his ace-king, you know, or something. So I'm going to go with my gut and the fact that it's hand of the week. And I don't think John can go on a heater like this. I think that he would lose his hand for some reason. It just feels that way too. So based on that bet, based on the multiple people in the pot, based on the guy being a calling station, I'm going to fold.
Yeah, and the other thing you have to keep in mind too is that the son of the gun could raise.
Yep.
I mean, he's, as you mentioned, he's been the alpha male up until now. So, I mean, there's no reasonable expectation that this guy's just going to fold or just call. I mean, if he feels strong enough, he might re-raise. And already 150 seems a lot for me to put in this pot, but I'm not going to put 300 into right. this pot. And at that point, if he raises, I mean, what expectation do we have that we are good?
Yeah, we're screwed.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna let this go, and I'll mutter under my breath if it was good, but I don't know. There's just too much danger here, Will Robinson.
Yeah, I would rather lose $31 and learn a lesson to not even play this hand from the beginning, or, you know what I mean, then lose my whole stack to, oh yeah, he did have a boat, oh yeah, he did have quads, or whatever. So I would rather lose 31 right now than regret it. You know, yeah, it's going to be a big pot if you ended up having the best hand, but it just feels, you put all the information together and the story together, I can find a few stories that beat us the way this is played, and that's too many for me.
Yep. All right, our hero says, my love of the river quickly faded when I saw a bet and a raise in front of me. Yuck. I doubt either player's bluffing here. Both showed interest on the turn and continued betting with four players left on the river. So if they're not bluffing, what types of hands love this board yet check the flop? Ace of clubs, queen of clubs, or ace of clubs, ten of clubs is impossible since I have the ace of clubs. The original raiser could easily have pocket kings or pocket eights and possibly even quad jacks. With his inexperience, though, he may also just have a good jack and expect it to be good. The other gun plus one player seems even stronger. He raised a player, clearly had a hand with two other players behind him, who also showed interest. King Jack 8-8-7-7 and flushes all seemed likely. However, with my two clubs and his nearly pot-sized bet, I thought it weighted him to having a boat, and I thought there's a good chance at least one of them had a boat. After a minute or two of deliberation, I painfully folded.
Yeah, right. I don't disagree with it. He made some good points there that, you know, kind of reiterated what we were talking about, you know. But the way he said it, sounds like they don't have a boat. But I'm hoping they do. We made a good fold.
He says, result, the big blind folded. The under the gun called. Under the gun showed ace-jack for trips, and the under the gun plus one showed nine of clubs, four of clubs for an inferior flush. After seeing how loose this player was pre-flop and how these players overvalued the hands, I regretted my fold. Well, again, that's results-oriented.
Right.
I think you made all the right points that we made as to why folding was a good move there. So, you know, now you got education, right? So now we know that this is a really loose game and with players that really don't understand what's going on here. I mean, that 9-4, I mean, maybe that's why that raise was so big was to, I mean, it worked, right? It worked in getting the better flush out. So can't necessarily criticize him, but.
Yeah, I mean, I've done that. Like, you do that a lot in stud. You know, you raise to make them get the better hand out because you know you could beat the inferior hand on your right, yep. You know, but the left hand is a weaker player and he might fold to a bigger bet, you know. So I've done that in stud. It's harder to do it and hold them so much, but in this case, it was a perfect storm. And the thing about it, too, is you can't find the fault in the 9-4 until you go preflop. Preflop, I can't understand, under the gun plus one, calling a raise with 9-4 clubs. I mean, that's how you know how loose he is.
Ace of clubs.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, the 9-4 clubs, after that, everyone checks around that flop. We all, you know, if that guy doesn't check his jacks, if he bets out because he realizes he has multiple opponents and he should probably get paid off, someone should probably have a king there, then he gets that guy 9-4 out and he wins this pot. He probably gets us out. Instead, they all check around. The 9-4 gets to see the turn and pick up his flush draw. But, you know, it's not a bad fold in my mind. It's the right fold because of the way it came down. And you could find a plausible story that beats you one or two times. I don't disagree with the fold, even though you would have won. That's results oriented.
I bet you if you put that in the advancedpokertraining.com algorithm and play it over 1,000 times, this doesn't happen very often.
Right, exactly. Unbelievable.
980 of those 1,000 times, it's going to be the right fold. So,
well, the good news is that he only lost 31 on it and didn't cost him a stack. The bad news is that if he had called and tried to make a bad call or a loose call, that he would have won a ton of money. But you know what? He's still on the show and he's on again next week, so that's got to be rewarding itself.
Absolutely.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.